Hello, welcome to the Screamcast, a slasher podcast. I'm Dan.
And I'm Olga, and today we're discussing Scream 2.
Had a bit of a struggle with that one. Alright, so this is our second little, well, I guess it's technically our third little special episode where we talk about a full feature-length slasher film. We talked about Scream 1, and the whole thing, the whole shtick here is that Olga... is a Scream franchise version, as far as she's only seen the MTV show, and then Scream 1, and now she's seen Scream 2. I have seen all the Scream movies many times, so we're just basically going to be getting her reactions, just sort of saying first reactions, talking about like what the movie think about, how do we think it compares to the other things, maybe either the MTV show or the other movies. What's your general reaction, I guess?
So... I would say that I didn't enjoy it as much as Scream.
Yeah.
Here's my thing that I feel like I kind of always knew about slasher films, and one of the things that didn't appeal to me about them wasn't necessarily the fact that, oh, people get killed, it's scary, there are jump scares, whatever. It was just the idea of how logic doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I feel like there was a lot more... illogical decisions made in this movie than in Scream, that made me annoyed.
I will agree that, like, Scream 1, they take a lot of time to be like, oh, you know, horror movies are so stupid, you know, the big boob girl runs up the stairs when she should be running out the front door, like, we're not gonna do that, because that's dumb. And then they kind of just do a lot of that in the sequel, and that's kind of why, like, sometimes maybe it shouldn't do sequels, but... Because I definitely think, like, especially, like, I remember, like, Cece, her whole scene just feels like any old slasher movie.
That made me really mad. And you kind of tried to reason it a second, because she walks out the door calling campus security after the killer is like, I'm going to kill you, I want to kill you.
Yeah.
And then she goes back in the house, and you reasoned it like, well, she saw that one of her sisters was in the house. But I was like, yeah. But she talked to a guy who has already claimed that he wants to kill her.
Yeah, and so, there is a murderer killing, like it wasn't like a clear serial killer yet, but someone had murdered two students from that campus.
Right, So I was just like, then she hangs up, stops trying to call campus security, and then starts looking through the house just in case.
And honestly, like, we had also talked about how that whole thing could have been totally fixed by him just not saying, I want to kill you. It could have been more like just being a little creepy and putting her on edge and then hearing a noise.
Right.
And then she'd be, and then when she realizes that it was her room, or no, her sorority sister, that, oh, I'm just being silly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that all, it's a very easy, quick little thing. But we're, you know, we're going into specifics, whereas,
we're not going to do it. But that was just an example of, like, one of the really big logical leaps that got to me. And when there's a couple of them, they don't bother me, but they just kept happening. But I have to say I liked Randy more in this movie.
Yeah.
I liked... Randy was less annoying.
I think Randy is at his best in this movie, which that actually makes it kind of hurt when he gets killed, but I also think it was a smart choice.
Oh, yeah. I was actually surprised. There were a few surprising moments in it, which I have to say I wasn't super surprised in the first one by a lot of stuff. I was like, oh yeah, I figured that would happen. I figured. Because I'm familiar with a lot of tropes.
Yeah.
And therefore I'm familiar with the idea of subverting tropes.
Yeah. Well, you're familiar with the new tropes that were created by subverting.
That's the thing. It's a product of... We just realized that the first Scream came out almost 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So, and this only came out in 1997. So it only came out a year after Scream.
Yeah.
So, you know, this has had time.
Years or whatever.
Yeah, this has had time to, like, permeate the culture.
Yeah.
So, it just... Things got to me by the end.
I do want to say, this is... This one, I do enjoy Scream 2. Mm-hmm. I think that there are definitely good moments that I want to get into and talk about. Especially, I guess I'll throw out there right now, because I don't think it ties to a character, and we're going to go by character. I actually really like the play scene... where she's being, Cassandra or something, and just because of the sort of the PTSD and the paranoia and the visual of, like, all the people around her, I thought was, like, a really cool scene, both for the character and for the cinema of it. And so there's a lot of other big moments that I like, but I do think that potentially this is the least and I think this is a controversial opinion, because generally people think that Scream 3 is the worst. And I can understand why. But I also think that Scream 3 has a lot of fun elements that I'm just like, yes, quality-wise, maybe it's not very good, but it's, like, fun. And I think that this movie is the least fun. It's just kind of, like, it gets kind of dark. Goes around. It's kind of dank. There isn't a lot of, like, interesting visual places they go. And the characters are not very deep or even fun. Like, I feel like the Scream 3 people, which you haven't seen yet, but, like, they're actors. They're on a movie set. That's, like, fun. Yeah. Whereas, like, this is just, like, a bunch of sorority girls and boring boyfriends. And
yeah. Stuff. Well, that's the thing. This one does a really good job of, like, making sense out of Sydney's paranoia and, like, her trust issues, and it makes sense. Like, I would say that it all, like, her character and her character's choices, for the most part, make sense.
Yeah.
And her reactions.
Yeah.
Great. That's great. But it doesn't make for a lot of, like, I'm not happy about her feeling this way. You know? Like, I just don't enjoy, you know, I liked her after the first movie. I didn't want more bad stuff to happen to her, so...
I do think that... it's interesting. I can get where you're coming from there. I don't think that that really necessarily changes in the future films.
Well, great to know.
She is a sad character with sad things happening. I think maybe 3 has some more uplifting stuff in it, definitely. But her journey as a character from movie to movie, I think, is handled pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think that this is a good example of how a sequel can work well for a character as far as her dealing with the fallout of the last one. And there is more, you know, seriousness and, like, there's more to grasp onto with her character rather than just, like, oh, I'm a teenager, sex, blah, blah.
Right, right.
Like,
that's true. Yeah. I'm glad that sex wasn't one of the issues in the movie. But that's because it was addressing an entirely different set of questions than Scream was.
Yeah.
Scream... You put it in a very nice way of, like, what the goal of Scream was and the goal of what Scream 2
was. Well, that you know, the second one is about tackling sequels and what a sequel means, whereas the first one's about all horror, and whereas, like, the third one is about trilogies and finales and how you end things, and the fourth was about reboots and
how meta. Meta.
Very meta. And then the TV show is about television shows.
Oh.
Which is only sort of successful.
Yay! That's what I started with.
Alright, so there's a few little just, like, side points I want to talk about before we get into the characters and what we thought about them and their depictions and everything. One is the whole opening. I actually really enjoy the whole opening film class debate. Surprise, surprise, as a film major.
Wow, Dan, how out of character for you to...
Yes, but, I mean, it was just fun watching, you know, Joshua, what's his name?
Joshua Jackson.
Joshua Jackson, yeah. I just want to call him Pacey because of Dawson's Creek, but,
I didn't watch that because I'm not a small...
Oh, also, cameo because Kevin Williamson, the writer of Scream, is also the writer of Dawson's Creek.
Was Dawson's Creek out already at this time?
I very much assume so because of Kevin Williamson and the Pacey of... Yeah,
I think from what I read when I was just overlooking the cast, he was cast as Pacey after this.
Really? Okay, I'm actually going to look into this. But do you have a couple... So the whole debate is the sequel thing.
Well, okay, so it's difficult. We continued to debate this. And it's kind of like, we can't consider it a true sequel if it's based off of other source material, like a book.
Like, where, like, the book already had sequels, so when they made the first one, they
like, can we count that? Like, technically, The Godfather is based off of a book.
Mm.
And The Godfather Part 2 is considered better than Godfather.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, Godfather 2. Being the book, too.
And in that case, where do you stop?
You're right. So Dawson's Creek was 98, whereas Scream 2 was 97. So that actually probably means it's the opposite, that Kevin Williamson remembered him from Scream 2. That's probably why he doesn't have that big of a role, because he wasn't Pacey yet. Very
ta-da!
Interesting. Yeah.
I was right about a show that I didn't watch because I was too young. / was not...
Your thing.
At all my thing. It's okay that it was your thing. I am currently staring at an OC poster right now.
Gotta love the OC, guys.
Hey. Welcome to the OC cast.
Ben McKenzie was much better in that than he was in Gotham. That's all I'm saying.
Is in Gotham. It's not over yet.
Oh, God.
We're getting super off topic.
Hey, this is what Scream is all about.
But anyway, in terms of sequels,
the sequels that outperformed, that were better than their originals.
But then do we stop at a trilogy? Like, does a trilogy count? Can we count the... not looking at the third part of the trilogy, just looking at the second movie of a trilogy compared to the first part.
See, I think that it can count in most cases. So they're not counting Empire Strikes Back because that was, like, planned as a trilogy, right? I think that... it gets iffy. So, like, I think that Winter Soldier, I think that totally counts as being much better than the original Captain America movie.
And I think The Dark Knight is way better than Batman Begins.
Now, but I do think that it's a weird, tricky area, because I think that Dark Knight, so I do definitely think Dark Knight is better than Batman Begins, but Batman Begins was definitely the beginning of a trilogy, and that was a plan. Now, on the flip side, obviously, they were hoping Captain America would be a big franchise.
Mm.
But when they made the first one, they didn't know how well it was going to do. It was kind of a bigger risk.
I suppose. But they're so good at predicting, like, the formula.
But back then, when Captain America, because that was the summer of Captain America 1 and Thor 1, and
they came out at the same time.
They came
out
the same summer. So
wow,
at that point, it was
ballsy.
At that point, it was pretty much just Iron Man. And so, and it was ballsy. And you're right, because, I mean, Captain America ends with, like, the Avengers are coming. So I guess that is, like, we're planning it. But they weren't necessarily planning a Captain America trilogy as much as he is part of the Avengers, you know? Like,
I get what you're saying. Yeah. I get what you're saying.
Either way, Winter Soldier is better than the first Avengers.
Yes, it is. But, okay, so would you say... I know you don't think that Toy Story 2 is better than Toy Story.
Yeah.
But there is Toy Story 3, which we both agree is better than the other ones.
And at minimum, Toy Story 2 is a good sequel.
Right.
I just don't know if I think it's better than the original.
As good as it was worth being
made.
Right.
And I will even go, this isn't really a sequel, it's a prequel, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually think Monsters University is at least on par with Monsters, Inc.
That's, like, kind of another conversation. Yeah. I don't know how to fit that into what we're talking about.
I do want to... I say I agree with them. T2 is definitely better than T1 for Terminator.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually... I think the best superhero movies to say as far as sequels are Spider-Man 2 and X2 because at that point... superhero movies were not a sure thing. Spider-Man 1, when they made it, was not made with, like, we're definitely doing a trilogy. They did not know how that would go. And definitely, I mean, X-Men 1 is a very low budget, pretty, you know...
like, it's hard to watch some in a way.
Yeah,
but I love X2.
Yeah. So, I think that that's interesting, for sure.
Basically, we don't know how to stand on this.
Yes. But I think that generally they're probably right, because I was trying to think of horror sequels that were better than the original. And if you guys know of... you can't be like, part 4 or something was the best one or something. That doesn't... I'm saying literally number 2 was
compared
better than
to
number one.
Yeah. Chronologically.
I don't know horror movies that well, but I can't think of one that I personally think of that as being true. So if you do, I'll be interested because it's funny because I get excited. Like, I hear, like, oh, Trick or Treat's gonna get a sequel. Oh, that's fun. I'm excited for that. But, like, maybe it's gonna suck. Like, maybe they shouldn't be doing... Well, except that, like, I'm happy all these Scream movies exist, even if I don't think that they're better than the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's an interesting thing.
Wasn't Dawn of the Dead technically a sequel to Night of the Living Dead?
Yeah, I'm not a big zombie guy.
But I think that is considered...
Better
than Night of the Living Dead. Like, just in terms of what I listen to. Because I listen to, like... a few podcasts that have a lot of, like, Nerdist, have a lot of, like, horror directors on, and I believe I've heard them discuss that.
Yeah. I'm also wondering, do people like 28 Weeks Later better than 28 Days Later? I've only seen 28 Days Later, which I thought was solid.
Right.
But I don't know how people think about the second one. We're going to... Let's move on from the sequel thing and talk more about...
Can I actually say...
Yeah.
Was Scream 2 trying to say that it would be better than the original?
I think it was trying, it was reaching for that. They were saying, we are with, okay, so we're doing, you know, more gore. We're going bigger. We're
right, having more deaths.
Yeah, more violence. It's bigger, bloodier, you know, more crazy. But I think it was, I think it was just saying, we're hoping.
Okay. Because I was about to say, that's kind of like a little cocky.
Yeah.
If you're trying to say, like, no, look, we're going to be better than what made us.
Well, you know what? It reminds me of the TV show, where it's like, you can't do a slasher as a TV show. Well, you're trying to. Whereas, so they're being like, you can't do sequels. Sequels suck. It's never going to be as good. But we're trying to anyway. Like, and so,
okay.
You know, it's one of those things where meta, and at the time, I think it's more understandable because, you know, meta wasn't as big of a thing. But meta only goes so far. You can only be like, hey, we're making fun of the fact that we're doing this, but you're still doing
it. Yeah. Yeah.
At the same time, Scream actually was planned as a franchise.
Right. That's why I have trouble also with this analogy, because it was proposed as a trilogy. Yeah. At least as a trilogy.
Yeah.
So, like, that's kind of its own kind of ballsy of being like, but we're not talking about the stuff that's planned as a trilogy, but this was.
Yeah. I do think that Star Wars and Dark Knight are kind of unique cases in that they're, like, really a trilogy, and then, like, the second one has, like, a cliffhanger. Like, most, second movies don't have a cliffhanger. So that doesn't happen that much anymore. I actually wish that would happen more. But
I miss the feeling of, oh, it's a sequel, I have to see it.
Yeah.
Now it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I can't remember, I mean, outside of the Marvel films.
Yeah.
I don't remember the last time I was motivated to go see the sequel in a theater.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like, I felt that way going from Hunger Games into Catching Fire, again, book thing.
Right.
And then I liked Catching Fire enough that I felt compelled to go to Mockingjay, which I ended up not liking, even though I knew the book wasn't as good, but I was like, well, the second movie is so good, maybe they'll find a way to do something with this. Well, they didn't.
Yeah. I mean, in my Catching Fire, for me, is the best book.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, now let's actually move on. Sorry.
Let's talk about the message of the movie and the whole idea of, you know, violence. It starts in the beginning with the whole thing of, you know, the class, right? Where they're like, oh, you know, is it life imitating art? You know, is this movie like creating these crazies, or are they already crazy? And it's also coming off of the first movie with Billy being like, I'm trying to remember the exact quote, something like, you know, movies don't make people crazy, you know, movies make, you know, crazies more creative or something like that.
Right.
And then you get to the end with Mickey and his whole thing, and she's going to blame the movies. That's why he's crazy, because it's zeitgeisty. And it's interesting because it was so zeitgeisty then, and it's still so zeitgeisty.
It is.
Like, it's definitely a big thing. And like, especially also video game that it has not died.
Grand Theft Auto. Yeah. The kids are going to get hookers and break into cars now. That was me imitating suburban mom.
So now, I actually think this is the whole art creating violence thing is a very interesting debate, because my whole thing at school was about, like, media matters, messaging matters, like, don't just put something out there and not think about the effect that it has in society.
Right.
So, like, I believe that, you know, cinema has an effect on people, and TV shows have an effect on people. At the same time, I don't think they make you violent, but I'm kind of in an in-between zone where I don't really know where I stand on this.
Interesting. I never thought of it like that, but that's true, because I'm a big proponent of, like, representation.
Yeah.
Of opinion and representation of, like, diversity.
Yeah.
And of the real world in general on TV.
Yeah.
But if you were to ask me if I think that seeing violence causes violence, I'd say no.
Yeah.
But I think it's mostly a matter of, like, acceptable behavior.
Mm.
So if you... No, I mean, even then, like, in games like Grand Theft Auto, it's acceptable behavior. But if you don't have anyone... If it's just a kid, like, doing that on his own without anyone guiding him or her...
Yeah.
To saying, like, you do understand that this is not actually something that's acceptable in the real world, and here's why, like, you can't treat people like this, then... this is just a vague example, then then that's like, maybe it will actually influence them.
Well, but that's the thing is, I think when it comes to children,
right,
that the people have a point here. But the whole, like, of course, at the end of the day, we have the rating system for a reason. Video games have a rating system for a reason.
So the kids don't see it. And movies, too.
Yeah. And so if the people in the stores are selling them those games anyway, and they shouldn't be, if the parents are letting the kids get those games, that's on those people. That's not on the creator of the game who was saying, my game is not for children. So I do think that if a six-year-old is playing something where they're murdering human beings on a regular basis, I think that will have some effect on the person. I'm not going to say it's going to go make them murder people, but I think it will affect who they are as a human being.
And their perspective of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if someone, as in this case, what is it, the movie Stab?
Yeah.
Stab, the movie within the movie based on Scream, or the events in Scream.
Yeah.
That's a rated R movie in context, and isn't it?
Yeah, no, but I think it's an interesting thing, though, because the world that this film depicts is a very callous world where there is a movie being made based on real-life killings that happened a couple, maybe a year ago, and people are excited and wearing the costume. So, what does that say?
I think it's just a slightly more exaggerated version of our world. I hate to say that, but I'm a cynic.
Yeah.
So, proud of it-ish. But
I'm interested if people have examples of something similar to this having actually happened.
So, here's the thing. In the world that we live in now, right now in the last, I'd say 3 years, maybe 5 years, but especially the last 3 years, since the movie massacre in, for the Dark Knight Rises. The Aurora shooting, and since, Newtown and,
everything.
All these horrible, horrible, killing sprees, it's different.
Yeah.
And it would be a lot less likely to be depicted in a callous way.
Yeah. I do think that's interesting also because that was the year, the Newtown year was the year that things like The Following and Hannibal and things were coming out. And it was it was a big zeitgeisty thing to be should we be allowing these shows to appear and what effect are they going to have and blah, blah, blah. Isn't the movie by depicting people being excited about watching that? In my opinion, it's saying people are desensitized.
Yeah.
And
it is. But it's a commentary.
Yeah.
It's a commentary. It's meant to be.
But I think isn't the message of the movie saying that people aren't, the movies don't do that? Isn't the movie promoting that movies don't have that effect? But at the same time,
It's trying to say it's desensitizing you to what normal is, and normal could be extreme violence.
Yeah.
That's what I think it's saying.
Or is it even saying that people are just callous to begin with and that doesn't matter about the movie?
It could be saying that, too. But I'm not ready to give in to that view of the world, as cynical as I am. But
I guess I think it's an interesting thing, especially also, they also have this commentary about the trial and, how people make such a big deal out of trials. And I think that's interesting, too. But I think I do agree with the quote from the first movie as far as I don't think these things make someone psycho. I think they fuel people who are already capable.
Mm-hmm.
They make them, they add to their desensitizing. They make them angrier. They make them more likely to do things. They give them ideas.
Because they don't understand consequences necessarily. Yeah.
But honestly, the media does a lot more.
The media does a lot of awful, awful work. And I think that that's another commentary that this movie was trying to make of how in the face of the victims all those reporters were and how Cotton was obsessed with getting his story out there and getting on national news.
Exactly. Yeah, you want to point a finger at somebody, it's the people who are making these people into celebrities.
Yeah,
and that's giving people motive.
Which we struggle with to this day. There's this huge thing of how after these killing sprees, how we know the names of the killers, but we don't know the names of the victims.
Struggle with to this day. I'd say we struggle with it more than we ever have ever.
I hate to say that, but
No,
but that's not a new struggle, is what I'm trying to say.
I definitely agree with you there.
It's disgusting.
So, do you have anything else you want to say about this, or can I move on?
No, I'd like to stop thinking about this.
Stop of the world being terrible. So, another point that I just wanted to throw out there is that we know that, I had never known this until I was reading the Wikipedia article and prep for this, that Scream 2 had originally been very different, and that the script had leaked online, and people knew who the killers were. So, things had to be... Yeah, do you want to say something?
Well, the script except the last 10 pages... They actually, from what I understood...
Are you sure about that? Because people knew who the killers were.
Did they?
Yeah, that's what I read.
From what I understood, no one knew who the killers were, but it was being set up in a different way, and then they revealed that the killers were actually supposed to be so-and-so.
Well, if they didn't know who the killers were, why would they change who the killers were?
Good point. Yeah, I'm just trying to read... That's what I read.
We clearly are sort of reading conflicting things, so if you know, and one of us is right, or there's a bigger story here, let us know. But I did hear that originally it was me four killers, which I think is, like, wow, that's a lot of killers. Like, that's like, Scream Queens territory over here.
listen to our other episodes.
Yeah. And it was going to be Derek, which I'm glad they didn't do the boyfriend thing again. It was going to be her roommate, Haley...
Or Hallie.
Yeah, and then it was still going to be Mrs. Loomis, and the last one was actually going to be Cotton. So very different ending with a big conspiracy of people, which I don't even know how this would have worked. I don't know if that would have been better, necessarily, but it was the original vision, so maybe it would have worked better. And, I mean, they were on a very tight schedule. This movie had to be out super fast after the success of the first one.
All of the lead actors were committed to other projects, and they were doing this in their hiatus.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of the side people were also, you know, doing things like that, where they were, you know, like Sarah Michelle Gellar was.
They had
Buffy
to get it out. Yeah,
and it was just like, we got to get this out, big bucks, like, you know, we got to do this, get it out for next year. So and so they were literally like rewriting things on set, and like
that sounds so stressful.
And it wasn't even just rewriting things. Like, I believe that Wes Craven ended up rewriting things when he wasn't the screenwriter. Like, it was, you know, Kevin Williamson wrote the original thing. And so, like, I in some ways I don't necessarily totally blame them for some of the issues we have.
Right.
But, like,
knowing that now, I'm like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Actually, it's great, considering...
Yeah, yeah, seriously.
Working from scratch, basically.
Yeah.
But still, four killers!
Also, one of my favorite little fun facts is that this movie, they tossed around a lot of different titles for this movie. One was Scream Louder, and one was Scream Again. So, glad...
Again, really glad they decided not to do that. The two things I'm happiest about... is that they went just Scream 2, straight into the point, and that Derek wasn't one of the killers.
Yeah, definitely. All right, shall we get into just going through some of these characters? Do you want to start with what was it, Jada Smith's character?
I keep wanting to call her Jada Pinkett Smith.
Yeah.
Because that's who she... Oh, wait,
or
yeah.
Jada Pinkett.
Jada Pinkett, that's because she wasn't married to Will Smith yet. Yeah. So she's on the poster, first of all.
Yeah.
She dies in the first, like, 12 minutes.
So I assume picking up the Drew Barrymore role on the poster, I guess, is the idea. Like, she might be an important character, but not.
Right. So she plays Maureen Evans.
So, am I crazy? I was surprised that they were supposed to have been college students. Like,
yeah!
I thought they were, like, adults.
Like, yeah, I was like, these are people in their late 20s.
Yeah, that's why I was like, when I was rewatching, I hadn't seen Scream 2 in a while, and I was like, how do these people connect back to the college? Wow, they're, okay.
They are students.
All right. I mean, they're supposed to be seniors, they say, but still. Like, I guess the fact that they're supposed to be college students makes their, like, dickish behavior a little bit more excusable.
That's true. but like, the thing is, they don't seem like college students to me. Yeah, so it's like, I'm watching it, and I'm like...
they seem like immature douches.
Yeah, like, I'm like,
mostly the guy, yeah.
Yeah, mostly the guy.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about this and sort of, like, so they start this movie with a very clear commentary on race and sort of chastising themselves for the first movie.
Right, for, like, no, it's all white people, white, getting killed.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, at least they're being killed, so.
Yeah.
I think that they have some good snappy dialogue with the whole Sandra Bullock thing and with, you know, I think it's, and the fact that it isn't, you know, them there, and then they die, and then there's no more black people in the rest of the movie. There was clearly an effort here. I don't think it was totally successful, especially considering 3 out of 4 black people die in this movie.
Woo-woo!
But...
that's not great.
But I will give them credit for attempting, and, you know...
calling themselves out.
Yeah, I definitely think they still... could have done better, but a step up from the first one.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I believe... I'm trying to remember 3 and 4, but I believe this
I haven't seen them. Whatever.
I'm just going
to
say
we'll get to it.
I think that this is the best they do.
No!
From what I remember.
Stupid.
But, yeah.
There were no actors of, like, Asian descent in this. Were there? No.
No.
That's its own, like...
Or, you know, Hispanic or... You know.
All right. That's just like, all right, not great.
I mean, I guess that the black people specifically with horror movies have
That's
more
true.
Of a specific
There's,
thing going.
There's more of a trope. That's pointed out by Joel about, like, I'm a black male. Things don't go well for me. Like,
I also think it was interesting that they had just that sideline about the gay cop. And then he says, you know, don't ask, don't tell later, and gets killed. Especially just because in Scream 4, they act like a rule of horror movies now is you can't die if you're gay.
I
think it's supposed to be saying it's a sign of the times changing. Nowadays, you can't die if you're gay because, you know, homophobia is more of an issue with people. And
it's more of a vocal
issue.
Yeah.
That's why people have more of an issue with homophobia.
Right, right.
But I think that's just interesting, because I completely forgotten that the cop was supposed to be gay, and that was the whole little, tiny little side thing. But,
right.
Anything else you want to say about the sort of the opening with these two people? And...
Just as a side note, I remember as a kid, I came across this on cable, just the scene of Omar Epps's character, the guy, it's Phil, him getting stabbed in the ear or temple or whatever. In the bathroom, and it scarred me for years. Like, actually.
Yeah.
So, maybe that's another reason I never thought to seek out slashers. Why was I allowed to have the remote? So, Mom, if you're listening, I mean, she's nowhere up there with, like, Billy Loomis's mom, but, like, questionable child raising.
Yeah. I actually really like this open. I don't think it's perfect, but I think that they needed to do something big and you know, after the, you know, first movie's opening. And I think that I really like, generally, even though I think it seems crazy, but I on a meta level, I love that they made the first movie into a movie in the world.
Right.
And like, that's like a really cool idea, which I hadn't really seen anywhere else.
Unexpected.
Yeah. And I do think, and it continues to make the people, tons of people are wearing this mask thing, like, even more than before, it's, you know, it really works for it. But it's, like, a strong opening that I enjoy. But.
Should we move on straight to Sydney's arc?
Yeah, sure, let's talk a little about Sydney.
So, she's still our protagonist. That's all I have to say. End of story.
I mean, I think she's solid. I agree with you. It's maybe a little sullen, sure.
Fairly.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, I don't expect her to be Little Miss, like, cheerleader.
Yeah.
I don't expect her to want to pledge to a sorority.
Yeah.
That's not her character. That's not who got set up in the first movie. I'm okay with that. They kept her in line with who she was in the first film. Great. Great job.
Yeah.
Not exciting.
I understand that. I actually really like that she ends up continuing, but that her climactic decision is a tragic one, that she decides not to trust him, I think is really like, goes against what they would usually do. And
him meaning Derek.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's an interesting thing. And, you know, we deal more with the trust stuff in the third one. And I like that. I like that because it makes her an intelligent person. It's not like Emma, you know, who's like, oh, they have him in jail, so I'm going to leave my door unlocked now. Like, she's learned something from this experience. It's affected her. She's a human being. And she also does have a lot of, like, really great badass moments.
She does. I love her badass moments. I love it when they fight back.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Yeah.
If anything, I was like, oh, but you have so many more fighting back opportunities.
Yeah.
I think you're the person who would take them, but now they have to make you less of a badass at times.
Until the climax, basically.
Yeah, there. I'm like, you as you, if this was a person, would have had way more badassery. Also, that's, probably would have carried a gun.
That's, I think they deal with that in 3.
Great.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they do. I like that she also is not just a badass in that, like, sometimes when they have them be badass, it's like, oh, they throw a pot, like CeCe, like, threw a pot at him or something, right?
Yeah.
Like, she legitimately, like, punches people, like, multiple people.
When she slapped Gale.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Love it. Love that callback from Scream 1. Yeah. Glad they did it.
Yeah, and he, like, legitimately had a, like, a fist-fighting kick fight with the two killers at the end. Yeah. And, like, he was smart and did made good choices at the, like, so that, I guess, yeah, they, it raises your expectations because you know this person actually is smart and good that, like.
So, I'm actually thinking of the specific scene where they're in the cop car.
Yeah.
The cops are dead and they are trapped in the car with the killer unconscious in the front seat.
Yeah.
And it's a very tense moment and you really like the scene. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But for me, it was like, okay, they're out of the car. Great. And then Haley's like, all right, let's run away. And Sydney's like, no, no. And then she's like, no, actually, I am going back. I want to see who it is. And predictably, the killer is awake and gone, and then ta-da, like, consequences. And for me, I'm like, no, she's a strong enough person who would have been like, let's freaking barricade this door. I'll reach in through the window and, like, unmask him.
Or gouge his eye out.
Yeah, I made up the point of, like, she could literally, there are pipes, we saw pipes lying around that killed one of the cops. Freaking bash this guy's unconscious head. Like, I mean, movie over, I'm sorry, yes, but at the same time, it was disappointing because that's the character I've come to expect. You're right,
because if it was just, like, two newbies, I'd be more like, oh, they're frightened, they don't know what to do.
But
like,
it's not. It's Sydney, who wouldn't have second-guessed.
Yeah.
Who would have let Haley run ahead of her, been like, no, I have to do this.
Yeah.
Maybe a different kind of stupid.
Yeah.
But it's in line with who she is.
Yeah. I agree. I do think that that scene as a general thing, like, I love the claustrophobia there. I love the tenseness. I love the play. Like, I agree that, yes, that they foible here and there, but the fact that both of them actually managed to get out without him grabbing them.
Yeah, that was, I was expecting.
Especially because you expect it with the first time, you're like, wow, they didn't do it. Well, it's got to happen the second time.
The second time,
and
then
it doesn't happen either. So, like,
but then that's the thing. When they run and then go back, I'm like, all right, here's the tropey shit. Yeah. It's going to be the killer's awake, he's gone, he's going to kill the friend. And then I was like, yep, there it is. There, like, we go. It's
they're right smart there. Enough to recognize the tropes and not do them. But then they were like, well, what else is there to do?
They have to do it.
Yeah.
The rule of threes. Yeah. The rule of threes. It sucks, but, like, if you've seen enough stuff, you're going to expect it on the third attempt.
Yeah, definitely. It's what that scene, though, is one of those points where I'm like, I'm so glad I have a bad memory, because I didn't remember that they both got out. So I was like, oh, he's going to be grabbed. Like,
you were excited, too. Yeah. That's nice.
I do think that's a good transition to talking about her roommate.
Who
gets killed in that scene. A bad character.
Just boring.
Yeah.
Like, the psychologist.
I mean, we were both very positive on Tatum, and we like Brooke on MTV. Just a very flat character who I do think a lot of people, a lot of the newcomers were hurt by the lack of screen time because of the number of kills and because of just,
like, you had to have your core cast from the previous one. You had to have your development of, like, the plot just to move it forward with
it generally
kills
It's just generally a worse-paced movie than the first one. The first movie is just...
Yeah,
like,
that's a good summary.
Yeah, you introduce the characters, you understand the characters, you know, this flows from scene to scene in a way that makes sense. And I do feel like this one is more just like, you get little snippets. Like you know, we'll talk more about Derek, but, like, I like Derek's singing scene, but then that's, like, kind of all we get. And there's not, like, any more... There's nothing else there.
Yeah. There was really nothing interesting about the roommate.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, but she's a how did that actually play a part? Like, how is that important? Other than to give them reason to be at a sorority party?
Yeah, the whole sorority
But guess what?
Thing.
People go to sorority parties that aren't in a fraternity or sorority.
Yeah.
So, like, they could have just been at the party.
I guess, like, it's just to show, Sydney is, like, shut down and closed off and doesn't want to be having fun.
I mean, I suppose since it's college, it's, like, the college trope of people are in fraternities and sororities. I don't hate it. It was just weird.
Yeah.
It was just a weird attempt to develop.
I'm trying to remember which scenes you would excise. Like, which scenes were not needed. Maybe the whole CC thing. Maybe we didn't need that. That was a chunk of screen time.
The reason she was needed was because her real name is Casey.
Yeah.
And it was to show that the killers were trying to repeat
couldn't you have just done that with Steve and the two original people who were killed?
Yeah, you could have.
Yeah, I don't know.
You definitely could have. Or you could have had a far faster kill scene.
Yeah, I agree.
Or it could have been one of the sorority girls from the actual sorority that they were in. It was Cece, who's in a different sorority, who was alone at night. Why not just, like, trap one of the sisters, like Portia de Rossi's or the other girl, one of those sisters.
Well, it's interesting. So I guess while you were talking, I was checking the running times of the two movies. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Scream 2 must have a shorter running time, right? Like, it doesn't seem like that much happens in this movie.
No, it's longer.
It has a longer running time.
Isn't it the longest in the series?
I think I noticed that when I was
on IMDb, where it's allegedly the longest of all the series.
What happens? I mean, there's a lot of stuff with Gail and Dewey. Maybe there's a little too much Gail and Dewey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'd argue even that they spent too much time on Cotton.
Yeah. Well, but I liked, he was the only...
But he was supposed to be a suspect, so...
And also, he's in, quote-unquote, in the first movie.
Not really.
He's the only, new character that I feel like they actually developed well in this movie. So I wouldn't be like, take away his time, because he's the only one who was done well.
It was really enjoyable, too, watching those scenes, and they were very tense, like the library scene, right after someone threatened Sydney.
Yeah.
And the police put her in the corner.
Which was the only thing they did that was, really stupid.
Yeah, I was actually really proud of them up to that point. And after that, of like, oh, these police aren't incompetent.
Yeah.
And they died not incompetently. What? Yeah. But yeah. But then Cotton corners her and is like, but you have to go on Diane Sawyer with me. Yeah. And it's great. And then he's arrested and that's a necessary scene.
Yeah.
And we find out about Randy. Like, it's a good scene to reunite them and moves it forward.
I think Cotton,
with you. I changed my mind. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I think Cotton's really great. I love, he's so creepy, but you're like, well, he's too creepy. He can't be the killer. But they still bring him into that climax in a way that's really intense and really great.
Right.
And I like how it leaves his character, and the actor does a great job.
I mean, Lee Schreiber.
Yeah.
A+. Yeah. A+. Doing a really weird accent. Yeah. That's the one thing that kind of took me out of it. I was like, leave. What? Who are you? Where are you supposed to be from?
New York? New Jersey? I don't know that I've seen him anywhere else, so I thought that was just his voice.
No, I don't think so.
Interesting.
Is that his actual voice?
Who knows?
He might be a really good actor, so he doesn't use that voice anymore.
Alright, who else do we want to talk about?
Let's talk about Gail and Dewey.
Okay.
Don't call me Dewey.
They were both better in this movie.
They were. I like Dewey now.
Yeah, yeah.
He should have died. Yeah. Should have bled out.
Honestly, yes.
Alone. I'm sorry.
Whoa. Honestly, yes. He should have died. Aside from that, though, I really liked him in this movie.
Yeah. And great progression of him, them leaving it off from Scream.
Yeah.
I keep wanting to say, Scream 1.
Scream, the first film.
Yeah, where it's not necessary because it's just called Scream.
Yep.
Where he was stabbed, cut a nerve apparently. Mm. I like that. We talked about how it's like he's not dead, but there were consequences.
Yeah. I think the way he enters into this movie, now he's kind of just, he's not really being a cop. He's just wanting to look out for his surrogate little sister.
Which is heartbreaking, by the way.
He has, this act, he's like angry with Gail. He has this limp. It's all good. I really like.
He seems smarter, when he was talking to Randy and the Baskin-Robbins.
That was a really great Randy scene, too.
It was a great Randy scene. That's the scene where I was like, I like Randy in this.
Yeah.
But also, so much product placement in this movie. So much.
Yeah.
But he was logical, he was great.
I think here...
Gail was annoying at first.
Yeah. But I liked her, I thought that was good that she was annoying. I liked her arc again here.
She's supposed to be. Because she ends the movie reporting after the fight, and that's still important to her, and then you see the consequences of her actions again, of
also,
she's alienated Dewey, and now she's actually... Now she's also a subject of the reports.
Yeah. And I also like that Randy's a big enough character that actually makes sense that it affects her. I think that that's really good. And I do want to talk about their relationship because...
Dewey or Randy?
No, Gail and Dewey together.
Gail and Dewey. Okay, yeah, because
I guess the way it developed, I think was better than the first movie and was, I just don't care. Like, I wasn't even, I never know if the movie even wants, like, I think they want me to care. Am I really supposed to care?
I cared.
Really?
Yeah. I think I cared.
Well, I cared. Okay, here's the thing. I cared in the beginning when they were, like, fighting. I was like, this is a good character-building thing. But then when the ghost, when they're, like, having their romantic-y moments later and that, like, silly music plays, I'm just like...
That really bothered you? Yeah. You're like, their damn theme. And I'm like, they have their own theme?
Yeah.
What?
They clearly have this really goofy romantic music that, like... Maybe it's literally just the music.
I think you're just annoyed by the musical cues. Like, no musical cues. I refuse to be, like, pushed by you into liking this.
It's just, like, goofy, which I guess fits Dewey.
It does.
I don't know. I like them separately. I don't really like them together.
Huh. They should have killed Dewey.
Well, yeah, but more importantly... Dewey should have died. Like, not just they should have killed Dewey, but Dewey...
Because they kind of tried to kill Dewey.
Yeah, like, he was literally bleeding out for hours.
Well, because here's the thing. Cotton's like, no, this blood isn't mine. I found Dewey. Yeah. I was trying to save him. Which didn't make sense to me in terms of, like, placement. He was on the other side of the glass that around Gale, the corner yeah, that Gale was...
Gale should have been able to see him.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I understand there were a lot of doors, but so the placement didn't make much sense. Yeah. But...
More importantly, he seems to have left Dewey there. Because,
right.
Because later you see them in the morning or the midday.
It's definitely... It doesn't... Fine. Let's accept it's morning.
Yeah.
It was not dawn.
Yeah.
It wasn't dawn. Because the killing took place, like, at the big theater dramatical scene. That was at night.
Dramatical.
I heard myself say that.
It's like radical, but different.
Can we edit that out?
No.
Damn it. Dan edits his flubs out.
I have no flubs. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, so... Well, earlier today on a different podcast, I said... what the heck was it? It was like seriously and sincerely.
Dan has a lot of podcasts also. Anyway, in that dramatic scene.
It was clearly nighttime.
It was the middle of the night.
Yeah. So Dewey was definitely bleeding out for hours.
Right.
Yep.
And holy crap, he's still alive. Like, also, Gale, you didn't think to check on. Actually, no, she was shot. Yeah. Never mind. Also, freaking Gale, you were shot. It bounced off my rib. That's why it avoided my organs. I can walk. I can talk. No, you should be in freaking agony. Like, you shouldn't be standing. Like,
that kind of thing doesn't bother me. Him bleeding out for hours bothers
me a lot.
Well,
that too,
more.
But I'm like, you both should be broken.
But bullets in movies, I don't know. I've accepted this years ago. But...
Fine. I'll take it. Well, I'll take it.
The Dewey thing to me is a bigger problem.
It is.
Because... Why couldn't you have literally just had a scene where Cotton had actually got him help, and then they all just go visit him in the hospital, and he's okay? Like, if they really wanted him not to be dead, like, that would have made more sense, right?
Is he in a wheelchair in the next...
No. yeah.
I'm not saying I want that. I'm just like...
He should be.
He's been stabbed in the... back so many times.
Okay, who else do we want? Do we want to talk about Joel, the cameraman? I believe it's Joel. Double check. So
yes, it is Joel. It is Joel. All
right. I like Joel. I like Joel a lot.
Joel is his own kind of meta.
Yeah, I like them. I think he's funny. And the best thing is he's like the smartest character in any Scream movie or TV show ever.
I'm leaving.
I'm out of here. Like, and he survives. I wonder if that was, like, very much on purpose to, like, redeem the whole race thing.
Maybe. Or maybe it's just, like, we need a character who is self-aware enough to remove himself from the danger.
Yeah.
Might as well. It was also the nice thing of, like, well, her previous cameraman died.
Yeah.
And she was like, he wasn't gutted. He had his throat slashed. Great.
Yeah.
Like, how about neither for me? Bye.
He isn't in the union anymore.
Yeah, that was a good line. Yeah. That was a good line.
Yeah. I thought he was really fun. I don't have a lot more to say, but I thought he was a great little side character.
But then in the end where he's like, you belong in front of the camera or something to Gale.
What? Was that what I said?
No. He's not a 30s.
You belong here.
I'm gonna capture your soul.
I take it back. I think that Joel and Cotton are the two, both were handled well as new characters in this movie. Whereas, if now maybe we can talk a little bit more about Derek.
Derek was boring as shit.
Derek was just really bland. I think
glad he wasn't the killer.
I think he was a plot device for her, like, you know, whatever, you know, her feelings of distrust or whatever.
It made sense. It was a logical plot device. Yeah. I'm glad they, you already said, like, they didn't in time. She looked hesitant. Yeah. Like, Mickey did a good job of being like, we did it together. Yeah. Billy and Stu, part two. Great. Oh, that rhymed. And he was like, no, don't believe him. But I'm glad she didn't believe Derek fully.
But so here's, the thing is, we both liked his singing scene. I think that's also just, like, you know, it's kind of a quirky, different way to endear you to the character, right?
Yeah.
You know, they have this thing in screenwriting called the Save the Cat moment. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
No, I haven't.
So the Save the Cat moment is, it's usually with a protagonist. It's something you do early on with your protagonist to endear him to the audience.
Hmm.
Do something like saving a cat or, like, helping out a kid or, you know, like, something, being a good brother. Like, you know, like, something to just make you go, oh, they're a good person and, like, I want to be invested in them. Like, so, like,
interesting.
Something like Dewey being there for Sydney, you know, like, so I think that it's an interesting, it's not like, it just, this is an endearment moment that's like, I'm connected to him. He did this cool, cute thing.
Right. Because she tried to break up with him already.
Like, multiple times throughout this movie.
Right. But the first time, I'm like, no, I'm just dangerous. Like, I'm going to put you in danger after Cece was killed.
Yeah.
And he was stabbed in the arm. And she was like, I don't know, actually, if I can trust him. He seems to only have been stabbed in the arm and no nerve damage. You know, like, suspicious.
It's just that he just didn't have enough. I kind of blame the actor, honestly.
I love Jerry O'Connell, but I thought he was fine.
It was just, the character just felt bland. Even though that scene was good, he just didn't seem like a full person, so I didn't care that he died.
So you blame the actor?
Well, I think the actor didn't give charisma to... I don't just blame him. I blame the writing, too.
Okay.
But I think that the actor felt bland in a way that someone else could have maybe had that role and made them feel like...
Joshua Jackson.
I would have cared if Joshua Jackson died. Yeah. I would have cared.
Love me some Joshua Jackson. Yeah. And I like him from Fringe. If you want a show that you think is a procedural and then turns out not to be a procedural...
Watch Person of Interest.
No, watch Fringe. Damn you, Dan. taking away my plug for a show that's over for years.
All right, I wonder how many people we're going to get with all of these references.
How many people we're going to lose as listeners after this?
So many references.
Like the Scream TV series.
Well, the movie.
And the movie, but...
The movie, I actually thought it was interesting.
The first movie. This movie was referential.
But this was very interestingly referential to non-horror movie, like with all the sequel stuff.
That's true. Like Scream the TV series. Yeah. Booyah. Well, no. It's just in line with their with their property, I would say, to be really referential.
Yeah. All right. Who else do we... So Derek, I think, is flat. Who was the other person I thought was... I guess it was the roommate, right?
Yeah.
And then it's... Who else do we have?
We have Randy. We said how Randy was better, more interesting. His weird obsession with Sydney continues to make me uncomfortable.
It was just a little bit odd, but generally I think he was less creepy in this movie and more just likable.
Yeah,
and I did care that he died. I think he has a lot of funny lines, and I like that scene. Before he dies, that it is him, Dewey, and Gale working together, and then the killer calls them, and you're like, what? You can't kill any of these people. Like, how can the killer...
And the way the killer gets to Randy to kill him. And, oh, God. Yeah, it was a great scene. Yeah. I love that scene. It was a great way to get him to make a impactful death.
Yeah.
It was a very impactful death, and I was surprised it happened, like, halfway through the movie.
Yeah, totally.
I'm glad he didn't survive. That would have...
Yeah, yeah.
Been a bit much.
I think that was the... I think it was a risky move, but it was the right one.
Yeah.
Maybe you could have given him... maybe let him last a little bit longer in the movie.
But you mean delay this kind of scene? Because there's no better way to kill him than...
I know. I'm saying like still, in, he still dies in Scream 2, and maybe even not necessarily even in the climax, but maybe like you know when Dewey supposedly dies. Like, at that point in the movie, just because I think that you could have milked him a little bit more. Before.
Well, they were trying to go for the romance plot, and it makes more sense to draw that out so that there's an actual arc to them reconnecting.
Because, honestly, the Randy liking her thing would work better if they were more clearly actually friends.
Right.
And there was an inkling that maybe she does sort of like him.
Which,
like,
it was something I think we talked about after the first one, where we were like, do they even actually, like, does she even really know him?
Yeah. I liked the scene that they, when she immediately goes to him after finding about the killing, right?
Right. Oh, yeah, that was true.
Which I think is good, but to me that reads more as, oh, we both have the shared experience of having dealt with this trauma, not like, you're my good pal, because I don't really know, because all they talk about is the trauma.
Right.
I don't really know what they connect about beyond that.
Right.
And so, I mean, there are plenty of, you know, shows and movies that do the unrequited love, the friend loves the person, and it is not as creepy as this.
Yeah, nowhere close. And
so, yeah.
All in all, I'll miss you, Randy. You have won me over, but...
So it's interesting. Character-wise, you seem happier this movie, but just the little things
Yeah. Character-wise, I like it way more, but for me, it was the pacing as well. Yeah. You said it best. Yeah. It was pacing issues and those weird, like, logical leaps that weren't in line with the characters that I now like. So what the hell? Who else? Well, we could talk about Mickey.
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess both the killers, acting-wise, were just awesome.
Such a great cast. I don't know if I've made it clear enough how astounded I am by this cast.
Yeah, really, really great cast.
So good.
Yeah, actually, I do want to pull back for a second. I remembered Cece.
We
sort of already talked about it. I guess I want to throw out, though, so Sarah Michelle Gellar is Cece, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, if you're living under a rock. She had just been in I Know What You Did Last Summer. I don't like watching Sarah Michelle Gellar in horror movies because she's Buffy, and I don't want to see Buffy get murdered as a feeble, stupid, weak person. It's just, it just so intensely goes against what that whole show is about and what she represents to me, and for that reason, I guess I don't like seeing her as the dumb sorority. Like, it just does not work for me.
Yeah.
But
it just didn't feel interesting.
Like, I feel like the people who are like, oh, she's in Buffy, clearly we should cast her for horror movies, completely miss the point. If you're going to do that, she has to be the final girl. Like, you cannot just have her as a side character.
Yeah. Well, I think that was the point where they wanted another kind of Drew Barrymore-esque.
Yeah. Which, actually, if she had been killed in the opening, maybe.
But then it would have been too directly one-to-one. Right.
I think it actually would have been kind of funny if he was the one who was playing Drew Barrymore in the beginning.
But that's not enough.
Yeah. All right.
And that was Heather Graham, who's also a great actress.
I love the sort of spoof scene they did of the Billy and I thought that was really and it was
Billy good, and Sydney
and good foreshadowing for Mrs. Loomis. But let's get back to Mickey.
We'll address it when we talk about.
Yeah.
I think we should talk about Mrs. Loomis after Mickey.
Yeah.
So, Mickey. He's so fine. He's so fine. He blows my mind, / his head gets blown in. Hey, Mickey.
I actually really like Mickey. I think that, so, like, he is sort of in the stew role. Like, they recreate the dynamic of, like, oh, Sydney and her boyfriend and his best friend and her roommate who's sort of dating, like...
So, did you, on purpose, when I was like, oh, so he's like Stu, like, he's got a little bit of that mania, like, did you on purpose try to, like...
Trick you?
Trick me, like, divert me from thinking that way?
A little bit.
Ah!
Because I was like, but look how nice he is.
Yeah, and you're like, he's got some other stuff going for him. He's a documentarian, like, he wants to be Tarantino, like... Yeah.
But I really do like that he is so nice, and he's like, I'm here for you to sit or whatever, and he just seems actually upset about what's going on. So I like that. I also think it's great because he's even as, like, even not just as the killer, but even as Mickey, plant seeds of doubt about Derek with her, because he says something, what does he say, like, well, why would he have gone back in like that? Like,
that's true. Yeah. That was subtle.
Yeah, that was good stuff, which I hadn't noticed, like, the first time when I didn't know he was the killer, but it was definitely cool. And it, they clearly were setting her up throughout the movie to think that it was
Derek. It would be Derek,
which I think is cool. Yeah, no, because Mickey gets crazy, his motive is fun.
It's in line with the ideas / concerns of the time, in part the ones that were brought up by Scream, which came out just a year, less than a year before or something like that.
One thing I want to talk to you about, I'm interested, without saying the character's name, how you feel his mania compared to the mania of the killer in MTV Scream, and, like, do you think... Like, because they're clearly trying in MTV Scream to mimic that sort of theatrical, over-the-top insanity, right? That both of these killers have, Mrs. Loomis and, you know. So, what do you think is missing, maybe, in MTV? Like, or do you think that, do you like, well, I haven't even asked you, do you like Mickey's mania? Do you like...
I haven't thought about whether or not I like it, because I like his reasoning for it.
Yeah.
But, all right, let me put it this way. I liked Stu's mania.
Yeah.
Because it was in line with his character. You were like, but he's so much more. I'm like, yeah, but he was set up to be, because he was kind of like in your face and weird and like in your business. I would say that this is more comparable, this meaning Mickey, is more comparable to the killer on the show.
Yeah.
And in terms, like, of out of nowhere, they are.
Super crazy.
Super crazy. Right. But Timothy Olyphant has really buggy eyes.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's funny.
He's had a few of those, like, moments as well, where, again, I was like, oh, so he kind of acts like Stu a little bit.
Yeah.
And I didn't say that because he's the best friend of the boyfriend. I said it because of the way he acted a couple times.
Also, both Billy and Mickey, man, could you have picked a more creepy-looking person? Like, it just kind of stick out to me. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, they're both really creepy-looking.
Sorry. Timothy Olyphant, I love you.
I'm not even, like, I don't think he... looks unattractive, right? I think he does. He looks scary.
Like, no, I agree with you. That's the thing where I'm like, I'm not scared of you, but you look scary, man. I still think that it's more poorly handled in the reveal scene on the Scream TV series. Yeah. Because it was, like, truly out of nowhere. Truly, and like, theatrical.
Mickey isn't, like, dripping with, like, I'm, like, a blibber... Like, Stu was kind of, like, a blibbering idiot at some point. Mickey knew what he wanted and was intelligent to some degree. Like, he was more of a sociopath in the traditional sense, I feel like.
I would still say he's a psychopath.
Yeah. Okay, I can see that. But do you want to say anything else you want to say about him, or do you want to go to Mrs. Loomis?
I like that he comes back, and then both Gale and Sydney shoot him a bunch of times. That was great. Because apparently the third rule that Randy was saying about, like, sequels is that the killer... like, always comes back, or, like, the killer, make sure the killer is dead, or something like that.
Yeah.
So, they actually did that.
Yeah, that was good.
And then they went back, and Sydney shot Mrs. Loomis in the head.
That was great, too.
Anyway, Mrs. Loomis.
Let's talk about Mrs. Loomis. I mean, I think the actress does a great job again.
So, I was actually really hinted at, like, the importance of this character, because Laurie Metcalf at this time, she just came off of Roseanne, which was a major sitcom. She played Roseanne, like, her sister, I forget the name. Yeah. So she's not just, like, some small-time actress who was cast as this side role. No, it, like, made sense that she would be important somehow. Yeah,
though I believe you sort of exclaimed when she was revealed.
So that's the thing. I was like, oh, but... because I wasn't expecting her to be... Mrs. Loomis.
Yeah.
But I was expecting her to be important. Yeah. So I was like, all right, that makes sense. So I was I was pleased with how they did that.
The one thing I want to say about the Mrs. Loomis of it is, so this, her backstory is that Sydney's mother slept with her husband and then he, like, abandoned the family, right?
And then that made
Billy go crazy. Yeah. And also, I guess you're supposed to think there's, like, a genetic insanity, right, between the two of them. But
more buggy
wouldn't
eyes.
Wouldn't you think that this character, after her husband cheated on her, would kill both her husband and Sydney's mother?
Yeah.
That was one thing I was thinking. Like, I don't think that this character would just leave and abandon, like,
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, interesting. I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
But, okay, fine. If you want to accept that she's just, like, a terrible person who would abandon her son, but, and then the, like, weird backwards reasoning of her saying, like,
it's all about
you
revenge.
Your mother ruined my family. Yeah. Now you ruined my family. This is revenge. It's like, but you left.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it's actually, your fault. It's a very flimsy, to me, like, I actually think it would be cool if they had actually had it all be about revenge in a way that made more sense, because I think at the end of the day, she's just another crazy.
What do you mean, all about revenge?
Like someone who, like, I mean, there are tons of movies and things about people who are seeking revenge that aren't psychopaths, you know, like, who are, like...
I think I would have been bored by that.
Yeah.
That's not what I want out of this.
I guess, yeah, sure.
This isn't the promise that Scream the franchise makes me.
Yeah, I guess I understand that, sure.
The person has to be crazy. That's interesting. The person has to be, like...
pretty
kind of
there.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, have to, the killer has to make leaps of, like, who's responsible for my unhappiness.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting. These two, even though I think these two are good, and I think both actors do a really good job with their roles, these two, for me, are kind of the biggest letdowns of the franchise as far as who the killers are. I don't really even know why. I don't think they're as good as Stu and Billy.
No.
Well, okay, I guess the biggest letdown for me would be from the MTV Scream. But as far as the movies go, these two are just like, I'm not even saying they aren't surprised. Like, yeah, like, Mrs. Loomis thing is surprising. But it was just kind of like, yeah, okay. Like, I do think the finale is good, though. I love the whole Cotton Weary part. I love how much, you know, she fights back, but...
Oh, yeah, the whole Cotton, like, we didn't even address how... I felt kind of grossed out by how Sydney was like, if I do the Diane Sawyer interview, will you save me? Like, that was gross.
Yeah.
I still don't trust Cotton. I don't know how relevant that'll be for future, but I still don't trust Cotton.
He is in 3, I'll say that.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, not a huge fan, but I love Liev Schreiber.
Mm.
Oh, God, such a great cast. Have I said that enough?
Yeah.
I mean it. I really mean it.
All right, did we miss anyone? You want to scan through that list and just make sure we're not idiots?
Nah, we're good, pretty much.
Good. Well,
yeah.
Portia de Rossi was in the movie.
The dad of David Arquette played the sheriff. Cute.
I also just want to say I liked the touch of her using the Greek letters or whatever. You know,
yeah,
the,
to whip.
So yeah, that, like, basically
Mickey in the face.
You know, at the end of the day, you know, Derek helped her to survive, and that's kind of cute.
I would, like, move to Canada or, like, somewhere far, far away after this.
The setup for her in the third movie, she's, like, alone in, like, a bunker. Not, like, a bunker, but, like, she's in, like off in, like, a far away, undisclosed location.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I agree with your life choices, yeah. Sydney.
And I'm pretty sure she does have, like, guns everywhere, too.
I feel sad for you, Sydney, but your life makes sense.
Yeah.
I told Dan if he ever has a serial killer after him and he survives, I ain't sticking around. I'm like, nah, that's a target for the sequel.
I understand. I wouldn't do the same to you.
Great. Glad we're in agreement.
And let's be honest, they'll probably go after you because you're the girl. And
what do you mean?
Final girl. It's a slasher movie. They're not going after
you. So you're the
me.
Killer?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Wait, what?
I'm saying if there's someone who survived, then it would be you, not me.
Oh, okay. I got really confused. Dan, what happened? It's been a nice day.
I'm going to murder you after this.
Might want to edit that out. Just in case someone gets an idea. Oh, yeah, that was funny when it was on the phone with Cece, where it was like, murder, murder, murder.
Oh, yeah.
Kill, die. Like, that was so creepy. I wasn't
really
actually sure where the voice was coming from. He's like, stop it. Apparently, that was Selma Blair's voice.
Oh.
Do you know who Selma Blair is?
I know the name.
Okay, that's as close as I'm going to get.
I do also want to throw out, I love her Sydney's introduction with her, with the caller ID. Is this really funny?
Again, beginning. It made her seem like a badass.
Yeah.
Here she is. Ugh. Sorry, I'm fine. Oh, another thing. Just small, I love reading movie trivia. Like, I read a lot of movie trivia about movies I haven't even seen, which then makes me not want to see the movie because I know about it. Whatever. apparently, Matthew Lillard, who played Stu, makes an uncredited cameo in the sorority scene where he's in the background and he hugs a guy with his back to the camera. Mm. Apparently, the guy with his back to the camera was Mickey.
Oh.
Boom.
Wow. I want to watch that.
Yeah.
Because that better not be super obvious. Otherwise, that's like a big giveaway.
Right? Well, I think it was the whole thing of, like, because Mickey was walking around saying, yeah. Like, you could see, I noticed him walking around the party, like, high-fiving people, yeah. I think, and, like, chatting or something before he made himself known or more obvious to, like, Sydney and the other sorority girls and whatever. So, yeah.
I do think, even though I think that they, in the future movies, deal with the whole weapon thing better, I do think in 2 it's pretty ridiculous that she doesn't have mace or a taser at minimum.
Like. Or a chainsaw. Ha ha ha. Scream.
It's ha queens. Ha ha. Scream.
Scream queens.
All right.
To plug, listen to our Scream Queens episodes. Podcast.
Well, it's, this is the podcast. But you can listen to the episode.
Episodes. It's really late, guys.
Happy Halloween.
That too. Oh, yeah. So the reason this is out is because Scream Queens is on hiatus.
And it's Halloween.
And it is Halloween.
And horror podcast. Ooh.
Are you gonna cut this out?
Probably not. This is great. This is great stuff.
I'm just rambling.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you with Scream 3 at some undisclosed, depending on whenever Scream Queens is on break again, probably.
Happy Halloween!